MP Network is one of my favorite wrestlers, Terry Funk. He's part of a great wrestling tradition and a two-time champion of many different sports. He actually was a champion of the WCW, and actually the NWA and the ECW. And I've watched him many, many times during a 40-year wrestling career. And also, I'm sure you folks saw him in Paradise Alley as an actor with Sly Stallone. And he was also in a number of other films as well. And we're going to talk to him a little bit about his life, because it's all right here in this great book. It's called Terry Funk, More Than Just Hardcore, and it's published by Sports Publishing, LLC. You can buy it anywhere. All the bookstores have it. It's on the Internet at Amazon, or you can get it at sportspublishingllc.com. And Terry, welcome to the program.
Well, it's good being here, and you can get it from Terry Funk, too, if you send out the box 118 Canyon, Texas. 79015.
I think most people like
that's, what that is I'll autograph it for you, and I'll write you another book if you want me to.
There you go. I like this one. This is great stuff. I gotta say,
thank you. I really appreciate that. That's what it's all about. It really is. It's I get a great deal of satisfaction whenever somebody says, hey, I read that thing and just loved it. That that means a lot to me.
Well, I enjoyed it.
I want to say one more thing, you know.
Go ahead.
I know you've read it, and if you like it, well, tell somebody else, and if you don't, well, just keep your mouth shut.
Well, I did like it, and we got 9 million people listening, so
I'm just teasing.
Yeah, word of mouth is good, and 9 million people are listening right now to you, so hopefully many of them will go out and buy the book. But I also enjoyed Mick Foley's book as well. I thought he did a real nice job with his. And we're going to have Dusty Rhodes on to talk about his in another week or so. A lot of wrestling books out there, but this is one of the better ones. And again, because you have so much experience in the field, working with Dad as a promoter and growing up in the business, and knowing pretty much everybody in the business. Everybody gets their props in here, but I got to say, you were pretty nice about almost everybody in that book. You really didn't rank down too many people in there.
Well, why? Really, is I love my business. You know, and that's what I tried to relate to the wrestling fan, that it's and just the individual that picks it up and reads it. I want it to be a good read, and I'm staying true to how I feel about the profession. You know, the profession has been wonderful to me. It's given me everything I've got. It's given me a ways and means to support my family, you know, and my children, and my dogs, and my cats, and my cows, and my horses, and right on down the line. And otherwise, I wouldn't have a way to do that, you know.
Yeah. Well, they get you the good old Double Cross Ranch in Amarillo, Texas.
Yeah, it bought that for me. So how can I be any more thankful than anything? You know, in a business, it's not bad to anybody. You might have a few gripes and bones to pick about some of the guys in the business, but the wrestling business, it can't hurt anybody. There's no way that it can. It's not a mean object, or, you know, it's what you make of it.
Many of the matches you had were some of the bloodiest matches I've ever seen. And in fact, one of the ones is kind of legendary, the King of Death tournament, where you and Foley met in a barbed wire cage, and I understand you had like second degree burns and a few hundred stitches in your, and he had burns and stitches, and you guys put on a very good show.
Craziest, one of the crazier things that he and I ever got into, you know, was that barbed wire death match and King of the Death matches, and it was a crazy deal, but that's what Cactus and I were dealing with at that time, is that we were both independent wrestlers going around the country and going around the world and trying to make our mark. And we realized that the only way that we were going to get any publicity or notoriety was to do stuff that was, you know, I realized that, he realized that, was to do stuff on the extreme and stuff that was off the cuff, because we might get some coverage that way, and that's what we did. And but it's always been good to me, you know, because I've been able to. My idea of a good life is to be home every day that I possibly can, and to spend that those days with my family. And whenever we go, whenever I go out, is to go out, but to make the most of it, to make the most money that you can whenever you go out. And I've always tried to do that.
Well, you just mentioned your family, and one of the parts of the books that I thought was really it's kind of touching, because when your dad passed away, and you and your brother Dory Jr. took over the biz, you really dedicated yourself to the business at the exclusion of your family, and your wife at the time left, and life really was kind of perilous for you, but it seemed to me like eventually you found the real reason for being around, and found what was really success wasn't just money, but also was family and love and all that kind of stuff.
I'm in agreement with you. The one reason that I did just become obsessed with the business was because it was because of the family, because I didn't want to see the wrestling part of the family fail. And part of the family, right, is my wife and my children.
But the wrestling part of the family really was a legacy that your father left you, and that was a way of keeping him around, by keeping that alive.
That's exactly right. And I was so afraid that it was going to die off, and the legacy was going to die off, that it was more important than my wife and children. And gosh, it was a real tough time in my life, and I'm glad I got my ducks in a row.
It's amazing, actually. I mean, it was a long shot, because your wife got remarried, and the chances of you guys getting back together seemed pretty distant at that point.
I thought it would never happen, and God, I'm so thankful that it did happen. You know, as you have to have somebody to grow old and wrinkle with, and you want it to be the person that you really care for and truly love. I mean, that's a great person to grow old and wrinkle with. You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, your wife still looks pretty good, actually.
Well, she's pretty young. Dadgummit, she'd sure like to hear you say that. and I think she's gorgeous.
Now, you also have
always will.
You have two daughters. Did either daughter at all ever think about maybe going into the wrestling biz?
If they did, I would hang them by their toes, I'll tell you that for sure. No way in this family. And nothing against it either. You know, I mean, I have nothing against the girl wrestlers. It's just something if I had it to do again, hell, I'd rather be a greeter in Walmart. It'd be probably more successful and easier. It definitely would be easier on my family. And if I look at it that way, I love the business. And believe me, I'm having a difficult time right now burying the business. I bury it, and then I dig it back up again. And I bury it, and I dig it back up again.
Yeah.
Because I love it so much.
Sure.
And I realize it's that hook, and it would be a hook to my daughters. And it's not because the business is bad or what they will find in a business. It's a hook, but it's a hook that doesn't include certain parts of your life, that they can be better. Your world can be better without the wrestling business.
It was hard to believe that when you were 55, you were still out there wrestling Sabu.
It's hard to me to believe that, too, because when I was 55, I felt 105, you know.
And
you know what? I'm going to tell you something. That was some of my better matches of my career, because I'll be damned if I was going to let somebody say, hey, look at that old man out there.
Yeah, well, I understand that.
That was insanity, you know. It's,
talking about insanity.
I should have looked out there and said that, hey, look at that old man out there. I should have looked in the mirror and said that.
Talking about insanity.
You look in the mirror, that's a person you can never trust nor understand. And the older I get, the more that I know that.
And talking about insanity, I remember Cactus Jack, and then, of course, they changed him into, quote-unquote, Mankind, another one of Vince McMahon's great inventions. And he wanted to change you into something called Crazy Chainsaw Charlie. Some of his ideas are just so wacko.
Well, that was my idea, so I was the wacko individual, right?
I thought that that sounded to me like a Vince McMahon type idea.
No, I'm not always right. You know, one time I was in Corpus Christi for Joe Blanchard down there, and I was not Corpus Christi, but San Antonio area, and I was down there for the Blanchards, and they asked me what I wanted to be, and I get these wild ideas that don't work too well, and I said, "Doctor knows it all, occupation chiropractor," you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I went down there. That didn't draw very well, and I went up there to New York. This is many years later, you know, and I was always successful after that. But I went up there. The only unsuccessful one I had since Doctor Knows It All was Chainsaw Charlie. And Vince came up to me and said, "Well, what do you want to do?" I said, "Well, I don't know." He said, "Well, do you want to be some kind of, well, you know, if you want me to, well, I kind of want you to." I said, "Well, what about Chainsaw Charlie?" You know, and where that came from is a friend of mine, John Ayers, that was a tremendous football player from West Texas, was an all-pro for San Francisco 49ers. I just loved him, and I was the godfather of his kids, and he went ahead and would take his kid to get his hair cut, you know, and he would take him to, this guy's name was Charlie, and he called him Chainsaw Charlie, and I just loved that name, so I thought that'd be a good name for me.
It's funny because
that's how it occurred. That's a God's honest truth.
When I think of the chainsaw, I think of Jim Duggan or whatever it was that used to wield a chainsaw in the ring sometimes.
Well, maybe he could have been a bigger success with it than me.
I'm sure
he could have.
I find this whole thing, the book is great. You know, one of the things that I thought, and I grew up watching wrestling. In fact, I was personally thrilled to be talking with Bruno Sammartino and some of those folks on my radio show.
What a wonderful guy.
He was a great guy, and he was very honest with me as well. But I remember, you know, growing up and really, you know, rooting for the good guys and hating the bad guys. And I think the whole thing, and you talk about it in the book so succinctly, is the believability factor. You really got to sell the audience that this is really happening, because if everybody suspends their belief and if they think it's all bullshit, they're not gonna care about anything.
The wrestler himself, that's the crazy part that comes in. Believe me, I became Terry Funk that entered into the ring every night, and when I became Terry Funk, I really don't know, but it was somewhere between my house and that arena. And that's a God's honest truth, you know. I mean, in order to be very good at it, and you need to be an extension of your personality, but you have to feel and live what you are doing. And if you're a good guy, as I loved everybody when I was a bad guy, I hated everybody, and that sounds so crazy, but it is true. I mean, that's whenever you can attain your higher success.
You know, nowadays TV is so important to wrestling and to selling everything. I mean, everything is sold on cable TV. There's home shopping channels. But before all this came, you realized the power of TV. And in particular, I remember when you went over to where Jerry Lawler was, and you taped a series of commercials to be played over a span of time, and they had a record crowd showing up for you and him because you had pumped that thing. You understood even back then the importance of selling and selling and selling.
Well, that was actually, we did the largest crowd, you know, I mean, we did it previously, but we did the largest crowd in 2004, independent promotion, you know, and Vince and him came to Memphis, Tennessee and didn't draw what Jerry Lawler and I drew, you know. I thought that was utterly amazing. And it was, you know, I can't sell Jerry short on that because he was firing back from the other side, you know, with wonderful promos also. And that's a great deal of it. You know, you've just got a certain amount of time to sell those people that are out there. And every word becomes very, very important. Every word can be the difference between somebody forking out 10 or 15 bucks to buy a ringside ticket or them not doing that. And each word is important because you got such a short time to do it in. And I know that And that's why you see millions of dollars being spent on a 30-second spot for the Super Bowl. They want to make everything count. And what do? They sell for an entire year off the bat, you know. I learned that from the great promo makers like Boris Malenko, and like which is Dean Malenko's father, and one of them, you know, he was phenomenal. I learned it from Curtis Iakea, who is truly a great promo maker. Eddie Graham was great. My father was very good at it, and I learned from him also. But that is of the utmost importance that people overlook. And they think they can ride it. They think they can do that. You know, well, let me tell you something. There's not very many good actors out in Hollywood, and there's certainly fewer in wrestling. And I think it's much easier if they would just do an extension of the individual personality.
Yeah, there's so many things in the book I want to talk about. I could talk for 5 hours with you, but one of the things that I thought was really interesting was that when you became the NWA champion, that you got 10% of the crowd, but there was really no way to keep track of what that was. And one day when there was a snowy, yucky day out, you made $17.50 at a match. That's fascinating to me.
That was a good count. a good count that night.
I mean, it's pretty amusing that people think
the guys got their guarantee, which was 25.
Exactly. So yeah. You actually lost being the champion. But, I mean, it must have been difficult to keep track of the proceeds and stuff and to really get paid fairly.
Of course not. There was a few that would pay fairly. I can name them on probably three fingers. Don Owens, Paul Bosch, Sam Muchnick. Those were the three that really paid the best in the country. Owens was up in, that's where Piper came out of, and Piper always loved him. St. Louis was Sam Muchnick, and Paul Bosch was out of Houston. And they paid to the letter, you know.
Piper, you mentioned Piper, and you actually said something in the book that I agree 100% with. Out of all the wrestlers that have come out and gone into acting, I think that he was the best. In fact, the movie, I think it's called It's Alive or something like that, he was amazing in that film.
A classic, a classic. It's a film classic, it truly is, and Piper did a wonderful job in that. And the only reason that he didn't get tremendous recognition from it is because it was a low-budget movie.
And he was a wrestler.
And that's the other thing. They certainly don't want a wrestler coming into their business and being recognized better than the people in their business. Nor do I damn sure want an actor coming into my business and becoming the number one wrestler.
But I mean, you tasted the fruits of acting. You and Sally had a major role in that film, and I know you did Over the Top and Roadhouse with Patrick Swayze. So you must have enjoyed that as well.
Oh, it really did. And truthfully, to be as honest as I can about the thing, is it was great fun. It really was, and that's why I did it. But the greatest thing that happened to me from that. I was able to establish health in a union, and I was able to go ahead and get hospitalization through the years, which is something that most wrestlers can't get, and it is something that they all need. And I hate to sound like a broken record, but I am not a disgruntled guy. I'm being honest right now, because it certainly wouldn't help me. But the guys need to get together, and Vince does himself, needs to go ahead and provide hospitalization and some type of retirement. You know, I've seen too many guys that have gone through wrestling, and really they fade away, and they fade away out of necessity, and they find themselves a job as a security man, or, as a janitor, or just fade into society. It's a meager job, salaries. And the reason why is because nobody has stood up for, they stand up for each other individually as far as pay goes on a night, but they need some form of retirement, some form of union. And I preach that all the time. It's not for me because it wouldn't affect me in one way or the other. But I'm trying to talk to some of those guys out there just through you and through the media and say, guys, get together, get some kind of something for later life, because I've seen too many of the guys just not have the money that they needed to have even the proper medication.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And the only problem that stalls having a union is the fact that all the power is in the hands of one man right now, and he's not going to give it up to a union.
That's exactly right. And he's a very smart individual, and believe me, I've made a lot of money with him, and he's been very good to me, and he's very good to the wrestlers. And but I have my differences, and if I have a difference with somebody, I'm going to darn sure let them know about it.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to ask you about...
I'll give you a big difference between myself and Vince McMahon right now, as I'm supposed to wrestle for him on the ECW show.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you've heard Ayn Douglas and the Vince McMahon one. And that, I'll wrestle for it. You know, he called me and talked to me, and I haven't heard since. But it's probably because of what I've been saying. But I've been preaching the truth, and the truth is this, is that Vince McMahon is the one that murdered that company. He's the one that buried that company. He's the one that killed ECW because it was competitive and competition. And all of those guys are my friends. And now really it goes ahead and it gets into my craw that he is the one that is making the money from it whenever he didn't even want it around. He didn't create it. He didn't do a damn thing for it. But now he's going to go ahead and make money out of it, and has made money by it becoming number one selling tape, a DVD right now, is that ECW, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But that really upsets me, and it bothers me. I'm very happy for the guys that are going to be on his show, because again, it gives them a payday. But I'm not happy for Vince McMahon whenever he killed it.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, you're at least 60 now, aren't you, at this point?
About 85, but yeah, I'm 60.
But I mean, can you keep wrestling if you want to do it? Are you still in good enough shape to do it?
Well, I think I'm wrestling, but I'm not sure my opponents do.
I mean, I assume that, I know you've had a ton of injuries. Everybody has that wrestles.
Yeah, I've had a lot of them.
Are they nagging you?
I'm sorry.
Are these injuries nagging you at all, or are you all right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. My injuries are nagging me, and my wife is nagging me. They're both wanting me to quit, you know. That's what I said. You know, it's about burying the profession, you know, but I keep on digging it back up, and I know I need to get away from it, but it's just... it's just a great deal of fun to me. It's been my life, and it's been a good life.
It's in your blood, and when someone says, "Hey, Terry, here's I got a deal for you," you're gonna listen to them, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was looking at some website that has a list of all the wrestlers who've passed away. Many, many wrestlers, young guys, who've gone, you know, from Owen Hart, who had the accident, to other people who I didn't even realize had passed away. Why do you think it is that so many wrestlers die young? Do you think that it could be related to some of the things they do, like some of them have done steroids to recover from injuries?
Owen Hart is certainly an exception to that.
Yeah.
His was
an accident.
It was a total accident, and that was a tragedy there. Yes, definitely. I think that... A way of life, You know, whenever I started in the business, it was not whenever I started, whenever I started in the business. When I was a young man of 5 years old, I mean, my first memories of 4 and 5 years old, my first memories were wonderful. You know, wrestling was a family-oriented profession. We rode down the road together in a car and pulled a trailer house, you know, and a house trailer, and we'd go to the next area, the next territory, and we'd pull into those territories, and we'd trailer court, and there'd be four or five other wrestlers there, and we were very tight-knit, and there was no wrestling on Sunday, and you only wrestled as far as you could drive in the afternoon and then back, you know, and to your major town, and that was a fun deal, you know, and it was a great deal, and the family was together and close-knit early life, and later it's changed. Mm. You know, it's changed now to where we're on the airplanes and we're totally alienated from the family life, and that's not good, and that's where I think a lot of that comes from, and the demands from the public. Not the promoter, but from the public, that they look a certain way. I think we better take a good look at steroids in our society. And I'm not talking about wrestling. I'm talking about wrestling. I'm talking about basketball. I'm talking about football. I'm talking about track. I'm talking about baseball. I'm talking about it all. Because it's ingrained into everything, and it's ingrained into our society and our high school. And what it is no longer the man that tries hard, or that has nothing to do, or the person, the individual or athlete that devotes his life to training. It's the one that is the best cheater wins.
Hmm. That's not a good thing. You don't want to reward cheaters.
No, well, that's what we're doing now.
Yeah,
we're rewarding the cheaters.
Unfortunately,
all those professions that I mentioned, and we as a public, and I'm including myself into that, and as a society, as we don't want a society where cheaters win, and that's what it's becoming.
Unfortunately for the cheaters, though, many of them are dying young because of the complications of what they're doing.
That's very difficult to, you're in a very touchy ground there. What would I do if I was, and again, I'm saying we should can control it. We can't leave it up. We have to make it so stiff on those athletes that they won't do it. Because when I was a young man of 20 years old, you said, well, when will this affect me? And they say, well, it won't affect you for 20 or 30 years. Well, when I'm 20 years old, hell, 20 years is a lifetime. You understand what I'm saying?
Exactly.
It's a whole lot easier to do it.
Yep.
But it's not easy to do it if you say you can't perform if you do it. Because that's what everybody wants to do. That's why I would do it if it was the enabler. If the steroid was the enabler, you damn right I might say, hey, move over, buddy. Stick that needle in my butt if I'm 20 years old. If I love something that much, if I love it and want to do it that bad, that it means everything to me. It's up to us as a society to stop that, not the individual. We can't rely on the individual to do it because he won't do it. We have to do it.
You're right. I agree with what you're saying.
Well, thank you.
I mean, right now, it's a disadvantage if you don't do it. And if they don't test completely and if they don't punish people for it, then
exactly.
You're at a disadvantage if you're being honest.
Exactly.
I got a question for you about a specific wrestler, because when I was about 30 years ago, I was a ice cream truck driver, and I drove through a neighborhood, and they were all talking about this wild man that lived in the neighborhood, and it turned out to be a guy named Crazy Luke Graham.
Crazy Luke, now that wasn't Dr. Jerry, but Crazy Luke was crazy enough too. I love Crazy Luke. Now, Dr. Jerry was truly nuts, but Luke was just, he was halfway nuts, and a good nuts. But Jerry Graham, He was Gonzo.
But it was kind of funny because the whole neighborhood was terrified of Crazy Luke. But he seemed when I met him, he seemed like a pretty good guy.
Well, that's a different one than I talk about in the book. And Crazy Luke is a very good guy. It still is.
Yeah, I know there was another Graham that you write about that I didn't meet.
That was the crazy one. That was the good Dr. Jerry Graham. And I think many people write about him, myself included, Dusty, he wrote about him, about the same incident. Harley Race wrote the same incident. So if you people want to really get confused, read all three variations of three guys talking about one thing somebody did, and all three of us living that moment.
Now, Harley Race, talking about Harley Race, he wrestled till he was really old. I remember watching him looked pretty big and old on the race, but he was having a good time.
Well, Harley is, a lot of people don't know this, but Harley is just like a year and a half older than me.
He looks a lot older, though.
Well, all right.
He looks a lot older than you because he's not in great shape. You're in good shape.
I didn't say that, Harley. Harley, he might look old, but damn, I'd sure hate to have him hear me say something wrong about him, because I'd open up my door some morning and there he'd be waiting for me.
So we won't mention then that you said he was a real fat pig.
I said he looks younger than he ever has.
but you actually, you and your brother both ended up beating him to the championship.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, which is kind of interesting. You know, and it's also interesting in the book here. I think, this is a wonderful book. It's called Terry Funk, More Than Just Hardcore, and you can pick it up at sportspublishingllc.com. And I'll let Terry give his address one more time before we go. But in the book, you talk about how they picked the NWA champion, and it was really, because there was so many regions involved, each region had like a little input into it, but it was really about who had the most political clout to get it done, right?
That's exactly right. It was done by a vote at the time, and that's why it was very strange to me whenever people say, "Boy, I couldn't understand two things." Even back to Lupez and all of them, I never understood. Well, I am world's champion, they decided to put the strap on me is what it truthfully is. And you should be thankful to that. And if you get the thing, it's not because you were the toughest guy in the world or the most deserving. It was very political. And it was who could pull... you had to be good, though. Don't misunderstand me. You had to be able to sell tickets. And the best ticket seller... that they felt would be the best ticket seller was a person that would step into that position.
You also added another dimension to your championship that some of the other wrestlers weren't as concerned about, and that was to go to the different federations and to make their stars look even better while still losing to you.
I think that should have been the duty of every champion.
But they didn't seem to take it seriously except for you.
Well, maybe, as my brother did an excellent job at that, he was before me. Lou tended to not leave the territory as well, but he left the champion better than it ever was.
You're talking about Lou Thez?
Yeah, and if you understand that... the champion looked wonderful. The challenger didn't look as good as he should have looked. And that somewhat hurts your territory. But if the champion looks like he barely got out of there by the skin of his teeth, and your challenger looks like the champion, well, then you're going to do business the following week.
Which, I just wanted to let you one more time give out your address for folks who might want to write to you.
Well, by golly, is that I had it here somewhere, and I'm going to... I want to get the right address for them, but it's... and I gave it to you before.
Okay, well, people can just listen to the beginning and listen again.
Oh, I got it. All right, I've got it. The Funker found it.
Okay.
All right, it's Terry Funk, Box 118, Canyon, Texas, 79015. And send a cashier's check or a money order, and it's $25 for the book and $5 for the handling charges, and I will go ahead and I'll personally autograph it for them, and I'll write anything they want to except the Declaration of Independence. It's a little long for me.
Well, we're going to do we're going to put the address next to the interview, so people can actually write to you, along with some photos, and we'll try to sell a few books for you. But I think it's a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed it. Again, Terry Funk, more than just hardcore. And again, you can also get it from the manufacturer at sportspublishingllc.com. But mine was not autographed, so I'm kind of bummed about that. I lose in this deal.
Well, ship it out here to me, and I'll sign it and get it back.
Well, it was a pleasure talking to you.
You know, it was a real pleasure talking to you, too, and really, really enjoyed the interview, and thank you very much for having me on, and let's do it again.
I would love to do that, Terry, and maybe we'll talk during your next comeback. I expect that you will not stay retired.
Well, all right, I might show up somewhere.
I think you will.
But I'll retire immediately after.
All right. You take care of yourself, and say hi to Vicki, okay?
All right, thank you guys so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.